Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, and happy Valentine's Day. And this is one of those days that is now a part of our cultural life. Everything seems to point towards it, and you just have to walk. Well, just think about what happens right after Christmas. All the Christmas displays disappear, and what comes? Red, pink, the color of Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day cards. And yes, gentlemen, if you're driving home from work and you don't have what you need, you better stop on the way home. Hopefully you've made your plans. It has become big business in America, one of the top five holidays in America. It's not just candy and cards anymore. It's an entire panoply of things, from taking your loved one, your sweetheart, out to dinner to all the other things. But it's the right time to focus on what our society is now focusing on, which is love, romance, relationships. And no, we're not turning the show into Oprah. We're going to talk about what all this means. At AlbertMohler.com today, at my weblog, I've dealt with two developments that really deserve our attention. First of all, we have Newsweek magazine's cover story for this week. And folks, when you have one of the major news magazines of this country, one of the big three, Time, Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report, when Newsweek puts on its front cover the story about baby boomers at midlife seeking love and even sometimes marriage, something's going on. When you have midlife people acting like teenagers or young adults, when you have sexual promiscuity reemerging at midlife, when you have now adults acting as irresponsibly as many adolescents, something is going on, and if it has Newsweek's attention, it ought to have our attention as well. Secondly, I blogged about the development of these online dating services, and you know them by name. You hear them advertised. Perhaps you know people who are connected to them, because after all, just one of these services claims over 9 million persons registered. Folks, there are only 300 million persons in this country. So you're talking about one out of every 30 persons supposedly connected somehow into one of these things. This is a pretty remarkable thing. I don't know what you think about online dating, but I think it's something we ought to talk about. If you have that many millions of persons involved in seeking romance through online dating services, then it raises some big issues, especially when you look at how these services work and how they unite people, how they seek to connect people. They're measures of compatibility. There are some basic worldview assumptions in that entire process that deserve our close scrutiny. No better time to look at the special issues related to love and marriage and romance in the 21st century than on Valentine's Day. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK, and we'll look forward to an interesting conversation with you about how Christians should consider these new developments in the old story of human romance. Meanwhile, the Washington Post is reporting on a study released by the Pew Research Center entitled, Are We Happy Yet? And the answer is, well, mostly, Americans turn out to be a fairly happy folk. And the American public indicates that they consider themselves either pretty happy or very happy. Indeed, 84% of Americans identified themselves as being predominantly happy. Now, that is different than you would find in other countries of the world, according to the Pew Research Center, where there would not be such high measures of happiness. There are a couple of interesting things here. For one thing, marriage tends to make people happy. Church going tends to make people happy. The happiest people that reported in this study were evangelical Protestants. People who went to church regularly seemed to report themselves happier than people who slept late on Sunday morning. A couple of other facts in here. It turns out that having some money tends to make you happy, at least according to this. And perhaps that means more than anything else, not having to worry about some financial struggles. That seems to be correlated here, at least to some point, with being happy. Honesty compels me to tell you that there are several other issues that are related here. But I also want to tell you that there are those who want to suggest why happiness is an important part of being human. And wouldn't you know that the evolutionists have an idea about this? I mean, after all, the evolutionists have come up with ideas about why we believe in God and all kinds of other things. And in their purely materialistic, naturalistic way, they have to come up with something in order to describe why we would have even an emotional life, much less the specific emotion of happiness. I'm reading here from the article in the Washington Post today. The mechanics of happiness is not entirely clear. Perhaps the prescription desk of the local CVS, drugstores of assistance, but most speculation centers on Darwinian imperatives. For early man to roam the veldt, that is, the plain, in pursuit of mastodons and saber-toothed tigers required a certain wacky optimism. Man needed to be upbeat to keep going, this scholar, Mr. Dr. McMahon, noted, and all species need to be happy enough to reproduce. Okay, do these people, do they get together in academic meetings and talk about this stuff? Now, wouldn't you love to be a part of that seminar? Well, Professor X, how do you think happiness came about? Well, I think it was out there in the middle of the Serengeti, when you had to have a certain amount of happiness in order to decide you really could catch this tiger. And then I love the part about people having to be happy enough to reproduce. Just how happy do you have to be to reproduce? I mean, again, you just have to wonder what some of these academics are up to. But they're not finished yet. This same professor said, quote, "That's when happiness became an assumed entitlement of all human beings." He's responding back. He said, "Medieval man looked at plagues and beheadings, the sacking of cities, and two random massacres, and concluded, not unreasonably, that heaven surely held more promise. The modern notion of happiness as an earthly reward was born of the 18th century Enlightenment." Well, my response to that, as one academic to another, is hogwash. That is simply nonsense. We're told that a concern for human happiness emerged after the Enlightenment. Read the Bible. It was written 18 centuries in its most recent parts before the Enlightenment. Has a great deal of concern for human happiness. But you know, this article and the study from Pew really does raise a big question. Do we as Christians expect to find all of our happiness and satisfaction in this life? You see, that is the point that this particular professor, this analyst, was trying to make. He said, look, there are those who now believe that you really can have full happiness, total satisfaction in this life. That's, he says, a product of the Enlightenment. Well, it's a product of a denial of the life to come. You know, we as Christians do understand that we will experience a happiness that goes beyond any kind of happiness we can know here. We look forward to that day as promised in the book of Revelation, when every eye will be dry and every tear will be wiped away. When we see our Creator no longer through a glass darkly, but see Him face to face. We understand that there are hopes that in this life will never be fulfilled. There are expectations that will never be met. There are pains that will never be alleviated. There are sorrows that will never be totally taken away in this life. And that's why we look forward with longing to the life to come. I would have to say this. It is incredibly sad to think that we have to get all of our satisfaction in this life because it promises so much and delivers so little. Now, if that's true and evangelical Protestants are the happiest, I think this professor has it exactly wrong. If evangelical Christians are the happiest people, then the happiest people are the ones who don't think they have to get all their happiness in this life. And I think that is the right way to approach this data. The happiest people on the earth are the ones who don't have to be happy all the time. You know, when you think about all the sales of drugs, antidepressants, when you think about all the things people are doing to keep themselves busy and entertained, when you think about all the things people are doing to try to get distance from pain and sorrow and all these other things, it's an effort to be happy. Some people will buy happy if it means this experience will make them happy, they think. Or they'll buy happiness by seeking this drug or pharmaceutical if it will make them happy. And this article was honest enough to say that the drugstore may be some explanation for some human happiness is experienced in these times. But we're the people who are supposed to know, and I think we really do know in Christ, that we are not going to get full happiness in this life. And you know what? That liberates you to be happy. Because you do know that all things will be made well. You do know that every tear will be wiped away and every eye will be dry. You do know that every wrong will be righted and every injustice will be made just. You know that everything will be well. That's why we can sing hymns like, "It is well with my soul." That is not a denial of reality. It is the promise of the future. And it is the security of the Christian in the present. So be happy. Folks, there are so many issues out there, and, you know, when you start looking at the big issues of the day, you get just again and again and again the reminder that we're not looking at just a couple of issues, we're looking at big issues. And when it comes to marriage, for instance, Some people want to talk about it in terms of romance. Some people want to talk about it in terms of just being an institution of culture. But, you know, we have the real privilege as Christians of talking about marriage in a completely different sense, of talking about romance in a way that completely transforms the way the world would look at it. It's not just about two people who have an affinity one for the other. It's not just about sexual passion. It's not just about physical attractiveness. It's about the fact that marriage represents a very picture of the gospel. Now, we as Christians understand that marriage requires more than the world understands and delivers more than the world understands, and that's why our concern for marriage isn't something that can be reduced to the kind of conversation we would have about, well, why you would send a Valentine's Day card. But Valentine's Day is the right opportunity to get to the bottom line. What do we really expect out of romance? Give me a call. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. What do you think about online dating? 9 million Americans with just one of these services signed up. You know, the background to a lot of these online dating issues comes down to the fact that, the assumption is that marriage will work and that linking persons through these matchmaking services will work well and lead to lifetime happiness if there is a way to prove compatibility between the two parties. If you can prove compatibility between the man and the woman, you'll be a long way down the road, there is this assumption, in terms of creating a good match. Lori Gottlieb wrote an article entitled, How Do I Love Thee? For the Atlantic Monthly. And Lori Gottlieb is a secular reporter. She's written some interesting things in the past. And this article is really important, and I say that with full seriousness. It's very important. It's in the current issue of the Atlantic Monthly. You can get it at your bookstand, newsstand, or you can get it online at theatlantic.com. It's very, very interesting that this article goes in depth because, after all, Ms. Gottlieb here actually visited with the people at eHarmony and several other of these firms. And she talks about how they came up with the matching system. She interviewed Neil Clark Warren of eHarmony, and she talks about meeting him in his office and about his assurances that if she signed up for the compatibility kind of score, could find someone. She says this, speaking of PerfectMatch.com, eHarmony, and Chemistry.com, all have staked their success on the idea that long-term romantic compatibility can be predicted according to scientific principles and that they can discover these principles and use them to help their members find lasting love. I think that sentence is just everything about this story. That these firms have staked their success on the idea that long-term romantic compatibility can be predicted according to scientific principles. Now, when it comes to eHarmony, they, for instance, use a big questionnaire, GRID, a matching system. And there are hundreds of questions here that relate to every aspect of life. And Ms. Gottlieb, in her story, actually went into the science behind all of this. And let me just point out that in the very beginning of her article, she talks about her conversation with Neil Clark Warren. And he starts talking about how there are 9 million on the site. And he says, let me show you dimension by dimension how we lose people for you. In other words, you start out with 9 million potential people, and I guess, well, I trust about half of them are cut out. Assuming that you're a woman, they would link you with a man. And it says here, he's speaking here. He says, just on IQ alone, people with an IQ lower than 120 say, okay, we've eliminated people who are not intellectually adequate. We could do the same for people who aren't creative enough or don't have your brilliant sense of humor. See, when you get onto the tails of these dimensions, it's really hard to match you. You're too bright. You're too thoughtful. The biggest thing we've got to do when you're gifted like you is to be patient, end quote. Now, you know, it's all I hear to unpack. And we're talking about lives here. We're talking about aspirations. There's so much to this online dating phenomenon. For one thing, who are the customers? I was just talking to a group of folks here that are working with me, and I said, look, you know, do you think college students sign up for this? They're certainly interested in romance. But no, I don't think so. It's just a hunch. I don't have the statistics, but I just don't believe there'd be a lot of college students that'd be signed up for this. I think these are probably older persons, because I think they're probably not in the context where the kind of natural matchmaking would take place in terms of interpersonal relationships, the social networks that would take place on a college campus. I wonder how many of them are deeply involved in a local church. Because it seems to me that that's another place where, especially for Christians, it's just natural to make those connections, where you expect the kind of social engagement interaction that takes place in a congregation to produce this kind of matchmaking. And let me tell you, I am a member of a church where we see this happen. I am on a campus where we see this happen all the time. And I talk and speak and preach in churches where we see this happen all the time. But evidently it's not happening for some people, or they are not in the places where it's likely to happen, or likely to happen in a way that will lead to happiness. And so there are these firms. It obviously is a big hunger. I guess that's one of the biggest things I'm just going to admit to you this afternoon. I'm shocked by this. I'm shocked that 9 million people signed up for just one of these sites. I just would not have expected that there would be that many millions of Americans who would be looking for romance and, I hope, marriage, and would be looking at a firm such as this, a system such as this, in order to find that kind of happiness. Let me ask you a question, and this is where I would love to hear from you, our listeners. If you could, and let's just assume for a moment that there's a real science behind this, and there is something they're going to call science behind this. I'm not sure it's cold and hard science, as they would like to describe it, because I think a lot of it's just so deeply rooted in humanistic psychology and in the worldview of humanistic psychology that I'm not sure science is at all the right word for it. But let's just assume for a moment that there is a scientific basis to this. Let's assume for a moment that you could look at the human personality more or less like you would look at the human body and its physiology. Let's just assume you could have a personality CAT scan for a moment. Again, I don't believe it's possible, but let's assume it's at least partly possible. Let's say that you then found person A and person B, and they appear to have similar senses of humor, similar interests. They like to read the same kind of literature. They watch the same television programs. They like the same food. They come from the same socioeconomic background. They have roughly the same IQ. Spiritually, there is a compatibility according to their own guidelines, and we could go into that as well. But let me ask you the question, does that mean they're a good match? I'll just tell you honestly. I know a lot of couples where I think it's opposite to attract. I think that what you have there is not so much compatibility, but the bonding of opposites. Is compatibility in that sense really what we're looking for? Let me ask another question. Does love come at the beginning, at the middle, or at the end of a relationship like this? In other words, how much do you need up front? Now, obviously, in our system of dating and courtship and all the rest, you've got to know that you love the one and are loved by the one before you'd enter into marriage. But here's the deal. I think that the greatest satisfaction in love comes in the midst of the marriage, in the fulfillment of what marriage is all about. I think at the very beginning, you can't possibly know just how much you're going to love this person. And just as evidence for that, just remember that the vast majority of human beings throughout time have gotten married in arranged marriages, not through dating or courtship, and they found a way to love each other even in the midst of it. And, you know, interesting news story also out today indicating that, you know, the American way of courtship is spreading around the world. But, for instance, USA Today points out just today that in, just to take three countries, China, India, and Indonesia, marriages are still arranged by parents, sometimes with the husband and the wife meeting each other for 15 minutes before they're married. And that represents 40% of the world's population. So while we're sending our Valentine's cards to each other, let's remember that at least almost half of the world's population doesn't even get married this way, doesn't hook up this way, online or not. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. What are we as Christians to make of these online dating services? I'd love to hear from some who may have used one, others who may have considered it. What's your experience? You know, how should we think about this? What is the fundamental glue that holds a couple together? And how should we as Christians envision marriage along these lines? I don't think it's a slam dunk question. I tell you that right up front. You know, if it were an easy question, we'd let somebody else talk about it. It's a challenging question, and that's why we're going to take it on here today. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation to join this conversation. Call 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Lori Gottlieb has given us a fascinating insight. This article is really worth reading. I would suggest you get it. It's in the Atlantic Monthly, this issue. You can find it at your newsstand or go online, and you can find it there as well. eHarmony, just one of these firms, is facilitating marriages at the rate of 46 a day. That's over 33,000 members who've been married between September of 2004 and September of 2005. That just boggles my mind. That's a whole lot of getting married there. 877-893-8255 is the number. Valentine's Day is the day, and online dating and our understanding of romance is the issue. And I'll be right back.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
All right, welcome to Counterintuitive Valentine's Day. Why that? Well, when you talk about an issue like this, you kind of get ready for a lot of women to call. But I am thrilled that we've got a lot of guys that are ready to talk about this. I see that as a very positive sign. We've got three callers lit up right now, Charlie, Norman, and Bob. And we're going to hear the guy's side on this first. We're going to go to Florence, South Carolina. Charlie, you're up.
Hey, good afternoon.
Go right ahead, Charlie. What do you think about all this?
Well, I think that the compatibility issue should not be first. That actually commitment is your first key to a successful marriage, and that takes work. It takes a lot of understanding, forgiveness, and most of all, love.
I think that's well spoken. Charlie, are you married now?
Yes, I am. Happily married for 15 years.
Well, happy Valentine's Day to you and your wife. That's really sweet. So you speak with the voice of experience here. Let me ask you, just to what extent, Charlie, while you're here talking to a national audience about your private life, let me just ask you, to what an extent do you think you and your wife are really compatible?
If I had to put it in terms of percentages, I'd probably say 40%. And strict, compatibility is about the way that we think about many things.
Okay, well, that's an honest statement. I'll tell you, just also, being as honest as you were, I think you grow more compatible over time. I really do. I think living together. I mean, I like things to eat. I wouldn't have eaten that way had it not been for the influence of Mary, my dear wife. I mean, I wouldn't have thought of doing some things that way, and now it's just like falling out of bed. I mean, it's just the normal way to do things. I am sure I think about many issues differently than I otherwise would think, see things I otherwise wouldn't have seen, and understand things I wouldn't have understood if I were not married to her. It's interesting how your likes and dislikes kind of come together. Your shared experiences, I think, build a compatibility there. But it's this idea that up front you can have a scientific test about compatibility. I'm not sure that there's nothing revealed there. I mean, I think even these personality tests that people take, surely they reveal something of interest. The question is, what do you do with it? And what does that have to do with romance and marriage? Big questions we're asking here. Thanks for your call, Charlie. Let's go to Norman calling from Bardstown, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Norman.
Hey, how you doing? I was just touching base here. I have tried something new in the second time around dating, and I read Neil Clark Warren's books, Finding the Love of Your Life, and he talks about it in there that you should find somebody who's a lot like you, the compatibility issue. And I had always tried to find somebody, there's the passion sparks of someone who's the opposites attract thing, but I have found that the dating here on the other side of the big D, but actually I appreciate the fact of meeting young ladies that are, like me, or they think like me in Christian realm, or they think like me in, everyday life.
Yeah, well,
it makes a big difference.
Yeah, Norman, are you a believer in Christ?
Yes.
Okay, good. So let's talk about, for instance, the New Testament admonition that we are not to be unequally yoked together. So, I think you're making a very important point here that we are biblically accountable to make, and that is that there must be a compatibility of spirits here in terms, first of all, of being devoted to Christ. That's why there's no way that a believer and an unbeliever can be can enter into marriage. It can happen after marriage, we understand, and then, as Paul said, you need to be faithful to the marriage. But there's no way that a believer should ever, marry an unbeliever simply because of the incompatibility of spiritual priorities and of discipleship. And one has been called to sacrifice all to Christ and to follow Christ unreservedly, and the other one is not a follower of Christ. Those are two irreconcilable reality. So, you know, at the very baseline of compatibility, I think we have to start there, Norman. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Bob, listening on XM 170, calling from Flanders, New Jersey. Bob, what's your story?
I actually met my wife on an internet dating service, but it was not the kind of service where we had a personality profile and where they matched us up. It was more like they give you essay questions, you fill them out, and based on each other's answers, we met each other. And, you know, as it turns out, we're different in a lot of ways, but where we're similar is in our core values and in the importance of our Christian faith. And we had both made it obvious in our answers that we both held our Christian faith important. The other thing that's interesting is she did not have any picture posted of herself, so my initial attraction to her was really just based on who she is, not on what she looks like.
Well, now, Bob, that's a countercultural statement right there, and I appreciate you making it. There's a real sweetness in that. And you talk about the essay question. I think a lot of people out there are going, wow, you had to write an essay? But you revealed yourself and talked about your deepest commitments, and that's what attracted you to each other. I'm attracted to that idea. We'll be right back. All right, I'm catching derision and heat from the production staff here. They're calling me the love doctor. They know that's going to get under my skin. We normally don't talk about issues of relationships and all the rest. There are other radio programs that do that. But today we're talking about what marriage means in terms of how we should understand the development of these online dating services that are huge, huge. 9 million with eHarmony alone registered, according to this article by Lori Gottlieb, published in the current issue of the Atlantic Monthly. And I'm just wondering how we as Christians should look at this. As I said at the beginning, I don't think it's a slam dunk issue. In other words, I don't think this is an issue that's just clearly addressed in Scripture in terms of how persons meet each other. I started out by saying that I think the natural means of this happening in terms of young people being together, you know, for instance, on the college campus, I think that's a big deal. And I think the delay of marriage, and boy, you know how I talk about that. I think the delay of marriage is a part of this. I think there would not be such a huge market if marriage were not being delayed routinely now into the very late 20s, early 30s, and all the rest, because those persons are then out of the natural nexus of the young adult culture in order to meet each other. I also think the local church is such an important part of hooking Christians together, of relating Christians together, of helping to be a place where people come to know each other and see each other's giftedness and dedication and commitment to Christ and are drawn to that. But, you know, with these online services, I wonder about the basic premise. That's the question we're asking here. Is if there were a scientific means of understanding compatibility, is that the ground, the framework for how we should understand who should marry whom? I think it's a legitimate question. I think it's a question that is not likely to be solved or resolved in the midst of this program, but it's a good place to start. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Kathy, listening on WFIA in Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hey, Dr. Love.
Well, thank you. Welcome.
I appreciate Dr. Mueller. Your ministry is wonderful. You know, I really don't believe this is a scientific issue. I was working in personality profilings for careers and leaded and guided many people. Now, I see that there is things that we are more comfortable with due to our environment that we've been brought up with, along with certain characteristic traits. Our DNA God created us very creatively. I might be more creative than logical thinker than yourself. But I have found that I was extremely competitive on that profile that I took with a strong validity factor in there, because there's many out there that's not. You could lie and manipulate it. And I have found that I can change that. I can change that. And the way I've changed that is through knowing what my weaknesses are and bringing them to the Lord. In marriage, it's the same thing.
Wow, Kathy, that's a very interesting statement, and especially given your background in these personality profiles. I think that says a whole lot right there. I just see some real limitations in this. And again, I'm not saying that people can't be led to persons with whom they'll find long satisfaction. I can't say these matches are not right for a lot of people. I'm not saying that. I think that has to be judged in every case on biblical criteria for Christians. I'm just saying, I think that it's perhaps in human history a rather unusual place to begin the question in terms of this kind of compatibility. Thanks for your call, Kathy. Let's go to Dave calling from North Platte, Nebraska, listening on XM 170. Dave, go right ahead.
Yes, Dr. Muller. I just want to say that when we went through premarital counseling, we found ourselves to be very opposite, but our strengths actually are helped to shape the other. I think God brought us together to help to fill in the gaps. I guess that's my feeling on it.
Well, Dave, I appreciate your call. Tell me, what city are you calling from?
North Platte, Nebraska.
Now, see, that's what I thought. See, my call screener here doesn't know Nebraska. He put North Platte, Nebraska on here. I didn't want to insult your fine city there and the plains in Nebraska, but I'm pleased to hear from you. Dave, let me ask you a question. When you talk about, the fact that opposites were drawn together here, you know, are you still as opposite as you were when you got married, or do you find yourselves moving together?
No, and you made that point, and I was very glad that you did, because as we have gotten older, we have grown closer and closer, and things that I didn't think I'd ever like figure skating, I actually sit and watch with her now. So we are definitely drawing closer together and becoming more the one that God intended us to be.
All right. Well, Dave, that's a great testimony. I really appreciate that. Thanks for calling. It's great to hear from Nebraska. Let's go to Joe calling from Naples, Florida, listening on XM 170. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, Dr. Muller. I'm somebody who has been with my wife. I met my wife about 3 years ago today. And we've been married for about 2.5 years. And we met on eMode, which I don't know if we're no longer exists anymore, but it's an online dating service based on personality profile. And as far as the criteria that we had used, we basically made it so hard for each other that nobody would ever match up with us. And we ended up did meeting, and we found that we were pretty much opposite on almost every criteria except our core values, our religious values, our family values. And even when we went through counseling, we found that, just like the previous caller, we didn't match up on anything, but we knew it was God's will for our lives, and we went ahead and we actually ended up becoming engaged after 6 weeks of discussing this.
Wow. You're a fast mover, Joe. That's very impressive. And how long have you been married now?
About 2.5 years. And we had our bumps because we were just adjusting to each other. I remember in our counseling from our minister, he had said to us, it's good that a couple goes through one full season. And of course, he meant football season, hockey season, baseball season. But it actually ended up being a point for us because I am a sports fan, and she is absolutely not a sports fan. And we don't share anything as far as literature, movies, or anything like that. But we've understood in the last year and a half of our marriage that we need to give and take.
Great word, Joe. I appreciate that. Let's go to Samuel, listening on XM 170, calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Go ahead, Samuel.
Yes.
Go right ahead. We're glad to hear from you.
Oh, hey, how are you? Yeah, I'm thinking about the issues that you mentioned. One, you cannot have compatibility without commitment. Because the moment you eliminate the desire, the intent of the heart to be committed, then you're no longer compatible. With that commitment, you're able to overlook the flaws that all of us humans have.
Now, that's a very interesting approach, Samuel. And so you're saying that compatibility without commitment won't get you very far.
It won't get you very far at all. One of the things that the dating services allow you to do is they get you into a playing field that because of your career or because of your lifestyle won't happen any other way.
Yeah, but you got to follow that up with the kind of commitment you're talking about. I think that's a good place for us to pick up when we come back from this break. Some final thoughts on love and romance in the 21st century, how we as Christians should think about these issues, and really, what is the ground for getting together in marriage? I'll be right back. Well, love, romance, and marriage have been perennial human concerns. As a matter of fact, USA Today is reporting on finding the oldest love message, love poem, and written on a cuneiform tablet. Just a reminder, these issues have been around as long as there have been human beings from time immemorial. and for good reason. And we as Christians know why. It's because our Creator made us this way. Of Adam, the Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone, and that's why he created the woman. He created her as Eve, as the wife. She was named woman because she was taken out of man. And that urge to merge is a part of the human experience. And that is something that isn't just instinctive. And no, it's not just evolutionary, like it's happened like some kind of an accident in human development. No, it's from the very beginning of creation when our Lord God made this declaration and put this urge within us. But we also know that it's been a part of fueling literature, life, song, entertainment. Just think of Shakespeare's sonnets. Just think of all the way that the ways that romance becomes a theme for our civilization, a subplot for our culture. But we also need to look as Christians with some concern at the corruption of romantic love, at the reduction of romantic love to sensuality and physical attractiveness. We need to look at the breakdown of marriage and understand that romantic love is to point towards the sanctity of marriage, and God's glory is demonstrated in the right relationship of a man and a woman to each other, keeping themselves pure until marriage, and then keeping themselves unto each other until death parts them. We need to understand that marriage is so important that in the Bible it is revealed as the metaphor whereby we understand the relationship between Christ and the church, and we understand that the sacrificial love that that Christ showed the church is what a husband is to show his wife. We understand there's a right ordering within marriage. Now, what about these online dating services and compatibility and all the rest? I've already said that I think the breakdown of our culture in terms of the normal and customary place of meeting a spouse, the breakdown has produced a great vacuum. I think the delay of marriage has also helped to create that vacuum. Is it permissible for Christians to use these services? I would think it is permissible within appropriate boundaries. Is it advisable? I think that's a different question. I think it comes down to what you are looking for when you're looking for romance and where you hope to find it. And the very fact that 9 million persons have enrolled in just one of these services indicates there is a tremendous hunger here. I raise the question about compatibility. Let me just get to the bottom line on that. How compatible must you be? Well, number one, as a believer in Christ, compatibility requires, because the Scripture requires, that you marry another believer. And there needs to be a compatibility in terms of your commitment to Christ and your discipleship. There needs to be a compatibility in terms of your understanding of what marriage is before God. There needs to be a compatibility in your agreement to welcome children and to raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. There needs to be a compatibility in terms of your desire to serve and honor and glorify God. But a lot of compatibility is going to follow the commitment. And I think that's just the way God made us. Tomorrow's Ask Anything Wednesday. We'll talk about what's on your mind. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.